Hey, everybody. Welcome to Therapy Rocks, a personal growth podcast. I'm your host, Signa Darpinian, co-author of No Way and Raising Body Positive Teens, both with Jessica Kingsley Publishers in London. Do you ever wonder whether or not you should spy on your kid's phone or how to talk to them about online safety or maybe even have a healthier relationship to your own tech use? Well, here to talk to us today is the authority people turn to for empowering tech advice, Dr. Devorah Heitner. Her work has appeared in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and CNN Opinion. She has a PhD in media, technology, and society from Northwestern University and has taught at DePaul and Northwestern. Devorah works with schools and communities worldwide, helping parents and educators mentor kids coming of age in a digital world. Devorah, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I actually had a chance to see you on your book tour when you were in a town you might remember, Lafayette in California. By the way, you were one of the most incredible speakers I've ever seen.
Oh, thank you.
You really were. Gosh. And I thought we might start by talking about your idea of mentoring versus monitoring. Can you tell us the difference between the two?
Well, mentoring is teaching kids how to navigate these issues that come up growing up in the digital age, whether it's friendship issues, body image questions, exclusion, navigating balance with sleep and life with our tech. And monitoring is just kind of spying on our kids, using tech to control what they do. And there are a lot of people who are really excited about the idea of being able to monitor kids online, but it is not the most effective strategy in the long term, because who will be there to, you know, quote unquote, like monitor them in college or beyond? We need to teach them how to navigate this stuff. And looking at it with them could be part of mentoring, but we need to teach them. We don't want to just catch our kids doing the wrong thing. We need to teach them how to do the right thing.
I think it was in chapter one where you talked about how your concern in regards to mentoring versus monitoring also depends on your child's age, their judgment, their peer group, and your relationship to them. Are there circumstances in which you would monitor?
Absolutely. Like, for example, if your kid is a new phone user, you might want to sit down with them once a week and look with them at their texts. But the key is that you're not doing it covertly. You're doing it with them as a way of teaching them how to do it better. And you're letting them know what you're looking for. You're not trying to, you know, sneak and catch them doing something they shouldn't. The idea is that you're doing this together as a way to learn, and that ultimately your plan is to back off from monitoring as your kid gets stronger at doing it. And that they know when they can come to you, right? You shouldn't need to be monitoring them as they get older, but they may bring something to you if they're concerned. And keeping that relationship and that those lines of trust open really is helpful.
If there was a circumstance where you felt like you did need to monitor, then the idea is that you would never do it without being honest about your monitoring and talking to them about it, like transparent.
Right. Because what would be the goal of covertly monitoring your kid, right? What are you going to do with what you find out?
Right. I like how you talk about you're actually going to get a lot more by having a conversation with them than you are spying on their phone. So one of the other things that I was thinking about is I read the Huffington Post article that came out sort of recently where the general surgeon was calling for like a warning label to put on social media use. And you were one of the experts in the article as well. And I wondered, what is your stance with putting warning labels on social media?
I think that it's a tempting idea because it seems like it kind of gets a conversation going, but I don't know how effective it would be, because I think it might just make us all feel bad about the ways we use social. It's not clear that it's going to solve for the challenges, the very real challenges of navigating a life where we're also connected. And the worst part about it is that I worry that it could let the companies off the hook, and we really need to hold these companies accountable.
what would it look like to hold a company accountable?
The companies need to be much more responsible for the ways that if someone complains, for example, one of the big complaints a lot of parents have with these companies is if you do complain about impersonation, bullying, something else, then you don't get a response quickly because the companies don't really prioritize being responsive. And so we need to nudge that in the right direction by holding the companies accountable. And I worry that a warning label might be like, oh, well, then we can be as toxic and awful as we want because who cares?
I think it was the director of the Digital Wellness Lab talked about this in the same article where he said, you know, cigarettes, for example, it's a product that's toxic when used as directed, where social media, it's more about how you use it.
I think that's a really important point as well, right? Social media can be a really positive thing. It can be negative. And for a lot of us, it's kind of both, right? And most of us, it's not extremely positive or extremely negative. It's kind of like the foods we eat, right? There's a mix of, you know, experiences we have, and not every meal is going to be like delicious and amazing, but it's also not harmful. So I think it's really important to be realistic about social media. And I worry that a warning label could make people feel bad without being helpful in any way. Like, it doesn't really tell parents like, oh, well, how can I actually mentor my kids? How can I use social media in a way that supports my parenting or my own life, including sometimes getting out of those nasty parenting Facebook groups, maybe that make me feel bad about myself or compare myself to other families, right? So how can I make positive choices and lead by example? The one thing about a warning label that I think is tempting is that it can foster discussion. I don't think we should just entree our kids into social media without conversation. And so I'm concerned about the current moral panic around social media. I think it's not healthy. And I think some of the ways that it's being talked about are not helpful. But I think no conversation is also not helpful, right? Just like letting your kid get on Snapchat, Instagram, Discord, TikTok, and YouTube without talking with them is also not a good idea.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the moral panic. There is so much panic around it in general. It's like you don't engage in fear-mongering, and it's just right. Kind of a nice antidote. It can be a scary topic. So when I'm reading your book, my mind is eased. Well, at the same time, some of the anxiety is increased just because ignorance is bliss, when you become,
I go to a lot of school communities and I always say I kind of want to spread the anxiety around with a butter knife because there are some parents who are so anxious that it's not helpful and they're trying to control every move and they're, kind of obsessing about it just because of something they've read. They don't necessarily have an organic reason, something that their kids are doing that should make them concerned. And then there are other parents who are maybe not anxious at all, not thinking about it at all, and handing over phones and smartwatches and other tools to kids in elementary or middle school without really any thought. And of course, you kind of wish you could have like, everyone should have like a mild amount of concern, maybe not anxiety, but concern, concern, awareness, thought.
Yes.
And so I think I would like to spread that anxiety around so that people can... Everyone should have a little bit of concern and focus on this issue, but we don't need to be panicking about it.
You achieved that. Can you say it again? I want to spread the anxiety around with a butter knife.
Right. Because sometimes, sometimes it's very concentrated. And, I speak at schools and I often will have the most anxious parents who are the ones who will come out to the talk. And then some of the people who don't come are like maybe not worried enough. So I think some concern makes sense. You're handing over a very powerful tool. Kids' reputations, as I wrote about in Growing Up in Public, are at stake, maybe not in some of the ways we tend to assume that they are, but, kids are able to share their best and worst ideas with a very wide audience in ways that are best and worst ideas were maybe hidden from view. Like we weren't as public when we were kids, unless you were a child celebrity. So it's important to understand that with, that great power does come great responsibility and a certain need to be aware and thoughtful.
It makes me think of in chapter 6, which is the sexting chapter. I love how you say there are a few things that kids can do with their phones that stoke parents' fear as much as sexting.
Oh, yeah. I have a whole chapter on it in my book. And a lot of people were like, do you need a whole chapter on this? And I thought, yes, it really occupies people's concerns. And there's such a range of behaviors that can kind of fall under this umbrella, right? There's like the literal, you know, sending nudes between kids, but there's also, you know, what about sort of just flirting with people? What about, you know, kids who are trying to meet one another to date with kids they don't know on Snapchat? What about kids who are trying to, you know, have accounts on adult dating sites as teenagers, like Tinder or Grindr? These are all concerns for adults. And the fact is, you know, teenagers are impulsive, they have hormones, they're maturing romantically, sexually, and they also, you know, sometimes want to do things that are risky because there's a reward center to the teenage brain that can kind of reward risk. But even adults do this and sometimes get in trouble. So it's not like just exclusively teens. And I think we also have to ask ourselves, like, had this instantaneous technology been available to us as kids, you know, is this something we might have done, right? And I write about that in Growing Up in Public, that we just didn't have the technology to kind of massively distribute these kinds of more explicit images. And that was probably made our lives easier because whatever we did wasn't shared as widely and wasn't as digitally, reproducible.
When we were growing up, I was coming of age in the 80s. It sounds like you were coming of age in the 90s. And just thinking back to all the steps that we would have had to take to send a quote unquote sexy picture or a nude. We would have, like you said, we'd first have to take the picture. Then we'd have to use up the entire roll of film in our camera, take it to the film shop to get developed, then go pick it up, and then take the time to even think about the end product and do we want to hand it to another person.
Right. At any time you could rethink, like, is this really a good idea? Do I really want to do this? Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot more space between you and the behavior at that time. I don't think my mind would have gone there or even remembered all of those steps that we would have had to have taken.
Yeah. And I think it's really important to understand, too, that we just don't live in a world where this is a safe way for kids or adults to express their sexuality, but we don't want to shame kids or make them feel bad for so many reasons. One, we don't want to infuse kids with shame, just full stop. We don't want kids to feel bad about themselves, their bodies, their sexuality. And secondly, it's really on us to make the world safer and not kind of heap blame and shame on children and teenagers. So often we see a very disproportionate set of consequences, especially for girls versus boys when this happens. I also wrote about the ways that there are sort of special risks, but also certain kinds of different ways that sexting gets experienced in LGBTQ circles among kids. And so I think that's also important to think about. It's just really important not to assume anything about your kid's identity and what they might or might not do in this area. And to really try to talk about this also in like a safety focused way, but also in a very respectful way, like if an image and really focus also on consent and to make sure your child understands they should never harass or cajole anyone for an image like this. If someone is harassing them, they are free to cut off contact. They can report it. If someone has an image of them and is threatening to share without consent, that's a very big deal. It's against the law. You have rights in that situation. Even if you've previously shared something consensually with someone, they don't have a right to blackmail you. So I think it's really important for kids to understand all of these things.
I think I was surprised at how little I know about reporting and sexting as a sex crime. Can you say a little more about what the legalities are?
It's different in every state, but just about every state has some kind of law that does technically criminalize sharing images of people under 18. The problem is it doesn't distinguish between an adult, you know, pornographer exploiting or trafficking children and, say, two 16-year-olds in a relationship exchanging images. The law often, in some states it does. Some states those distinctions are coming into play, but in a lot of places there's really not a distinction legally. So it's important for kids to know that. But in Growing Up in Public, I wrote a lot about how we don't want to overemphasize the legal piece because that's usually not where kids will get in trouble. Kids will usually get in trouble with a non-consensual share. Kids will get in trouble with their safety and their reputation and their experience of themselves is more on the line than their actual, you know, getting arrested. I guess the situation where a kid might still be most likely to face criminal charges is if they're harassing someone or, you know, sharing without consent. But generally now two consenting kids are less likely to be criminally penalized than we saw, you know, 10 years ago. That's not saying it couldn't happen to your kid, though. And there have been cases where kids even turned in their phone to law enforcement for another reason or around another suspected crime. And then consensual nudes, for example, even self-produced, like pictures of their own bodies, were on their phones, and they did get in trouble. And I really disagree with that. I think that morally and ethically, that's a very different scenario. And very problematic to prosecute kids for things like that. So, but it's fair to let kids know about that. But I think when we lean into the legal risks, which thankfully very few kids have experienced compared with the number of kids who've done this without experiencing legal sanction, it's important to say, yes, but your personal safety and your experience of yourself may be at risk, right? So it's more important to talk about safety and respecting one's own boundaries and other people's boundaries, as opposed to in your privacy, right? Your safety and privacy are at risk. And yes, legally, you're also taking a risk. But I think, again, when we sometimes schools really try to scare kids about this, and I think it backfires.
Any attempts that I've had around educating around sexting is really kind of met with, I already know that. So do you have any verbiage or ideas for how you might present it?
I think it's really important to talk about safety, privacy, self-respect, and really talk about the fact that when we want to express ourselves to someone, we can talk about also safer sexting, which I wrote about in the book, which, you know, and I'm really building on my colleagues, Samir Hinduja and Justin Patchett, who are researchers in this area and wrote about what safer sexting can look like. And clearly, a lot of us are uncomfortable with the idea of seeming like we condone any kind of sexual expression in the digital realm. But if you are going to do it, an image where your face isn't included, making sure the other person is okay with getting an image from you, like, there are ways to make it less risky. You know, sending an unsolicited image to someone is obviously, you know, extremely risky because they may report you. Doing it in the context of a trusting relationship. Again, we know that trusting relationships can end and things can change, but obviously sending to someone you're just flirting with is more risky than someone that you've known for a long time who you trust.
I like that. It kind of reminds me of a harm reduction approach.
Absolutely. And I think we have to think of this as a harm reduction approach, just like we know that abstinence-only education around sexuality just does not work. And so I think the difference here is some of us might be okay with our kids having consensual sex at a certain age, and there is no age where I would say sexting is, you know, totally risk-free and okay, just because of I always think of even just the simple, like, you leave your phone on the kitchen table and somebody's mom or dad sees your image coming in, or they lose their phone at school or on the bus. And you know, yeah. It's just like, even, you know, not the full horror story of like it getting airdropped to an entire school, but just the possibility of someone seeing it who was not intended to see it, or the feeling after a breakup of knowing someone has these images. Again, even if they don't abuse it, you can't really know, and they're there forever. And so that's a scary thought. And understandably, and I think it troubles a lot of people after relationships end.
One of the other topics that I found so interesting at your talk, and that I saw in the book too, was how you spoke about body image and how when we were coming of age, we didn't have pictures almost daily of our rapidly changing body like we do now. What are your thoughts about body image and social media?
Yeah, I mean, for growing up in public, I interviewed some really great people like Stephanie Zerwas, who's an expert on ED prevention, body image. And she was the one who clued me into how that sort of tween and teen years record of images can be a lot for many kids. And we may want to kind of slow down on our own posting. I mean, one of my key recommendations, not just around body image, but for trust between parents and kids, is to ask permission before you take and share pictures. And just asking permission may slow your roll a little bit of your own social sharing of your kid, but especially if you're planning on sharing from the beach or gymnastics or, you know, these kinds of more revealing photos, it may be better to take and share fewer of them in this time and give kids the space to grow up a little bit less under the microscope so that they can't do those kinds of comparisons if that's going to become an issue for them.
Yeah, it just seems like the comparison game obviously has the potential to be so much bigger than it used to be.
Right. And it's important to just allow for that space. And I mean, I think about, I don't have a lot of pictures between my bat mitzvah and my high school graduation, and that's okay.
speaking of parents, I love the Newsweek article that you wrote at this month in July 2024, and the title was so powerful. It said, "Everyone wants to save the children from social media, but what about the rest of us?"
I think it's really important to see which apps bring you joy. And so much of that is who you're following. Like, are you following someone who inspires you? Are you thinking like, oh, this person's TikTok, YouTube, or, you know, like I really love the channel How to ADHD, for example, and I get all these life tips from there. There's some other really great people that you can follow on TikTok or YouTube or Instagram that might be really fun. I love to follow other authors on Instagram so I can know when they have books coming out. And I love to get their informative updates and tips, both on publishing itself and the kind of business of being an author, but also the, you know, information from their books. And I just think it's really important to kind of choose wisely who you're following, because so much of your experience on social media is really about who you're following and who you're connected to. And are they supportive? And are you seeing the people you want to see? And taking control over the algorithms in that way, not liking or sharing content that is negative, because then you get fed more and more of that. So we really need to talk with kids about the ways algorithms work, help them curate their feeds, especially when they're new to social media and just getting on it. And then over time, reminding them that they're allowed to unfollow people that are negative or make them feel bad or left out. And as adults, really taking charge of if an app is distracting you or makes you feel bad, maybe taking it off your phone. Maybe you don't have to shut down your whole account, but just take the icon off your phone for a few weeks to see if you miss it. Do you feel like you want to go to your computer and check it, or do you not even think about it? I find certain apps that are not even social apps very distracting. So I had to take Zillow off my phone. Used to just compulsively look at houses. It was very distracting. I was trying to finish my book. That was a problem. So I took it off my phone.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're bringing up diversifying your feed. I notice it in treating eating disorders and body image. I noticed some time ago that every single person I was following was in my field, and which is fine. And there's a lot of really great positive content that comes there. But more recently, it occurred to me like, hey, why don't you diversify your feed? You know, there's other things I like. I love architecture and Spanish style homes and travel. And so it's just kind of nice to put eggs in other baskets, to not have them all in one place, even if it's a good basket.
100%. Even for me, yeah, the conversations about kids and tech, like otherwise I worry too that I'm getting really repetitive and people are like, no, what you post on Instagram is really helpful. But since I'm living in that world 24/7 and I'm kind of inundated with the research, sometimes it feels like, no, it's really repetitive. And I'm like, right, my feed is really repetitive on this topic. But most people aren't following, 60 people who research on this topic.
Exactly. And your feed is definitely not repetitive. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come and talk today. And honestly, after seeing you speak and after reading your book, I feel so much more informed and better prepared to help the adolescents that I treat, or also, help kind of guide my daughter and help her feel more seen versus quote unquote watched.
That is my goal. That is my whole goal, is just demystifying this for educators and parents and practitioners like yourself, therapists, other people. So when I, go out to work with hospitals and schools and companies, that's what I do, is just try to help people really understand what are kids doing on there? How can we be helpful? How can we get out of the way? So it really is gratifying to me that it has helped you feel like you can connect and understand more with your patient's lived experience as well as with your daughter.
After reading your book, you feel more equipped and you feel prepared.
And you can do this. I mean, ask your kid questions. The most important thing is to stay curious and have them teach you things. Let them show you the memes that they enjoy, laugh together at the things that are fun, on YouTube or TikTok or any place that they're hanging out. It's really helpful to have some shared experience in these apps so that you can kind of get a sense of how it's going for them.
Thank you for joining us today for another episode of Therapy Rocks. And a reminder that you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. See you next month.